Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Universal Love Movement Podcast Show, this special series where we're talking about accessing abilities. I am, you know, so honored that you've all stuck with us through the series. I'm not sure exactly where you came in, but this is a very exciting episode because I had one of my mentors, as I would refer to him as the OG, and that means the original guarantor of moving forward in the future. You know, we have President Dr. Michael Torrence here, who's president of Motlow College, and just a forward-thinking and kinetic tactician, strategist, and most of all, I don't know if we should put this at the very beginning or not, but you are a veteran, and I want to say Happy Veterans Day, because we are recording this near Veterans. Yes, sir. Hopefully you were celebrated accordingly, good sir.
Always, always. And I appreciate you having me on, Dr. Moore. I'm looking forward to, as we do have these conversations that can be guiding lights, bench post, or just ways of intersection and different points of entry for people to think and come to some conclusions about things that we're working in the world for themselves.
Yes, sir. And there's a future of us having our own podcast series that go into all of those different areas. And today I was really excited because we, throughout this series of accessing ability, we've explored various facets of ability, from redefining intelligence at the very beginning, because we know the older models don't work for everyone, and the newer science is actually helping to dismantle the older models. And two, we discuss embracing technology and transformative power of wellness and nature and how that can help individuals access new abilities. And for this episode, this is our synthesis series, right? Or I'm sorry, the synthesizing episodes of the series to synthesize our themes and exploring how task and outcomes shape our abilities and discussing the future of like education and human capability. And I know with a futurist thinker like you, you're really just a prolific mind in terms of just thinking about what can be and really, but also staying focused on the outcomes. So, you know, one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you first or ask you at the very beginning is could you just share your perspective on the relationship between a task and outcome and the evolution of education? I know that's a multi-layered question, but we've had many conversations in that regard.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the idea of how we developed curriculum with a focus in higher ed and throughout the whole ecosystem of learning and training and doing has been looked at as a standards box where we try and tie a curriculum to the ideologies, as well as the goals, outcomes, perspectives, and expectations of those who are coming through our programs. And the parents that are with it, they really get an understanding of why my child is going to learn X, and then the employer and or the institution that will be a receiving institution of these young people who've worked through tasks and have mastered tasks through various kinds of assessments and are able to move forward based on the success of mastering those tasks. Now they can transfer and or be delivered to a quote unquote largest workforce. And I said largest, not largest, largest workforce that allows for their further training, the opportunity to participate in innovation, and most importantly, to move generational security, and not wealth, not prosperity, but generation security. And that is just simply to be able to hold down a 9-to-5 and or work in a hybridized fashion, as we're seeing more and more people do today. You know, the linkages between the tasks and the access, as we think more and more about jobs, not of the future, but jobs of today, for today, are tied to the skill sets that people are picking up.
Right.
Now, if you thought about like the 1970s, 1980s, when we were still industrialized, highly agrarian, but using machines to do things more and more. And when I say things, I mean the heavy equipment. We've advanced to a plane, a different paradigm, where the utilization of computational data, spatial computing, AI, as well as the development of things that we don't know about yet, because we have all this data and information, and we're still trying to figure out how to put it all on a single pane of glass. That's my hope for the future, to be able to definitively break down the information down to someone's zip code and their street, so we can determine whether or not they're getting the skills and training that they need to be prepared for the jobs of today and tomorrow. So overarchingly, that's where I'm seeing things intersect. The assessment component of it, where we've really looked at tasks by completion. What does it mean to complete a task? I mean, the last time I checked, most of us were still learning. And I don't know that I've mastered very much in my life, because every time I think I've got a handle on it, it evolves. And the evolution is becoming more and more affixed and tied to the digital transitions that we've been experiencing. How does the commodity of learning how to basically code the World Wide Web, and now to interface AI with the domain in which you are quote unquote a subject matter expert. Initially people were running for the hills and saying, I can't believe that we're going to have AI as a part of what we do every day. And, you know, in retrospect, I think that people need to pause and recalibrate. We've had AI be a part of many things for the last 30 years. We just didn't call it such. It's been embedded into our lives since the first little garments that you put inside your car that you sat on inside on a dashboard to show you where to go and how to get to places. It's been inside of your phones and your watches and now in your clothes in some form or fashion for at least the last 20 years. It just may not have been activated. So it's an amazing time to be engaged with all of this, and the assessment components are going to be really tied to policy development. How do we make sure and ensure that policy is created for accessibility? And I think only through accessibility do we even get to equity.
Wow, that's are you still with me, Dr. Torrence?
Yes, sir. I'm still here.
Just cut out. There's so many layers there. And that last piece, and just to kind of backtrack what you're saying, the policy is so huge, right? And you mentioned the accessibility, the policy needing to be shifted and updated and revisited. And I think that that's something that folks don't think about that often, you know, in terms of what really drives or allows for folks to actually operate, whether it's in the educational sense or just individuals. And I want to go back to something else that you had mentioned earlier, just to kind of, you know, summarize and segue. What I was hearing you saying at the very beginning is that this is a pretty profound, we've advanced through the tasks that we've been called to do, as you took us through history and where we are now. And then you had mentioned the fact of us not having like a finite completion of, you know, tasks aren't really complete. So there's that, and I do think there's a finality a lot of times when people think about it. So I just wanted to call out that piece. And when you mentioned the digital transition, and it's always been around, and I think that's really powerful to make sure that folks are recognizing, like, hey, the learning is going to continue to happen. And for me, and you being a, you know, leader of an institution and an educator, like whether you're leading like locally or globally in these spaces, how have you seen that people are envisioning, and more so, I'm more interested in yours, of how education is going to shape human capability, especially in achieving these desired outcomes? You spoke about it a little bit there. Do you feel, are we serving the folks now in terms of their capabilities, given what you had just mentioned, or might you see it changing in a way where it's like education for capability versus just, you know, ticking a box or being able to, you know, have a degree, but really true capabilities? Where do you see that going?
Yeah, well, the responsibility of higher education or organizations that hire people to interface with other human beings, to train them and move them beyond the capabilities that they walk through the door with. So literally to help them become strengthened, because I don't know if it's better. I just know that they have a different set of skills and they're able to go out and get a job. The evolution is the only constant, very similar to change being constant. We know that the way that we have challenged as well as trained as and quote unquote educated our entire populace. That interaction had to evolve. In Motlow State's an example of faculty members, staff members, and our team understanding, to wit, you must meet people no matter where you are and what you do. You have to meet them where they are. And so because we have, at the youngest age, I think we have an 11-year-old taking classes with us now, and I think we have a 82-year-old taking classes with us now. And this doesn't speak to ageism, but it speaks to the necessary preparation and the flexibility and adaptability of the folks in the classroom as well as the institution. That 11-year-old doesn't know life without a phone or device that's portable in his hands to move around. And then the 84-year-old is representative of a time where they have seen several cycles of how portability of credentials, stackable micro-credentials, and assessment going from chalkboards, Scantrons, to doing it online in real time, getting your final assessment done as soon as you finish. That's a big shift.
It's a
huge chasm. You know, as we were talking about before, this idea of gaps versus loops. This is our opportunity to close loops when we talk about creating accessible entryways for people to then be literally shot out into the workforce, shot out for transfer, and in some instances, shot out to become their own bosses through entrepreneurship.
I love it. I hadn't thought about it even in preparing for this conversation. I hadn't thought about the fact that, because I know that the work that you're doing at Motlow and the work that you're doing with workforce development and just, you know, the ways in which you serve on kind of the cutting edge of the conversation, that you're in the business, and I mean, I know you're going to be like, no, duh, but I know there was an intentionality. You're in the business of improving human capability, right? Like, that's big.
Right.
That's a part of, that's a central thread in what you're doing and what you just mentioned about the, you know, those, the not gaps, what do we call it? Not opportunity gaps, but the bridge or the other side. How did you refer to that earlier?
The loops.
The loops, yes, that these deficits represent like something that needs to be done in certain loops. It's a big deal for me in terms of the future being right now in your activity and what you're doing. And when we look at like in your role, you know, how do you see and what have you experienced as it relates to educational strategies with the dynamic needs of workforce and society? And I'll kind of tee that up a little bit more than the other questions. When I was working in higher ed, you know, in order to get curriculum approved, you know, we had to go through and these are all my friends, like as a faculty member, the developer, the Senate, the, you know, all of the different layers, right? You know, there was a review cycle that we had, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of layers there I can get into. But when working at a community college, I was excited when I was provost there, thinking that, you know, we could have a workforce development arm. But there was a piece there that I experienced where there are certain things you could move forward when it's workforce a lot faster, but then there are certain, you know, elements of education that still need to go through its usual cycle. So there's a little bit of a tension there, or I guess I would say just a reality when it comes to being able to move as rapidly as society has. So how do you see, and what you're doing, you seem to be right there where you're able to iterate really fast, but how do you see the educational strategies and the dynamic needs of society, workforce and society, you know, kind of needing to be commingled and dance together better for that?
Well, we had a couple of things happen in the first several meetings that I had with business and industry. We have several groups, there's advisory boards, you know, in major corporations like Nissan, North America, the spirits industry within Tennessee that obviously people would recognize, Jack Daniels and Uncle Nearest as brands, but also George Dickel, as well as Chattanooga Whiskey and Gate 11, being smaller ones. And then lastly, some of the new upstarts, such as the ones out in the Eastern Tennessee. Specifically, we have one that is, I guess, a spinoff of what's happening, and because they have a better understanding of the science of developing whiskey out in East Tennessee, because there are former employees of some of the major labels. So those conversations always led to, we need higher education to move at the speed of business. Okay.
Oh, and wow.
So, okay. stay with me on this one. We need higher education to move at the speed of business. And I completely agree. And so I recognize the importance of rigor and quality when it comes to the development review, first time through assessment of curriculum, and then the various accrediting bodies that need to take a peek and make sure that we've done this without bias, you know, unintentionally. You know, we have done this with bias. We've created programs that are going to meet the needs of the people, and I think that is very, very important. So, and instead of attempting to move at the speed of business, what we've attempted to do here is move at the speed of Motlow. And what that means is that we're not moving at the speed of higher education. And oftentimes we're actually moving, I think in some instances, faster and at a faster speed or faster rate than business. So we're trying to make sure that we do what we do based on the abilities of the men and women that, or however our employees designate themselves, that we move at the speed and rate in which we are capable of. And that's been a paradigm shift for us, because our folks are starting to recognize their strength and their subject matter expertise, their ability to develop programs that can be sifted and shifted to workforce as a developmental area, then absorbed into the academic arena, with already micro-credentialing and stackable credentialing pathways from workforce into the degree pathway. So it's been exciting for us. It's to prepare students for transfer, to prepare students for the workforce. But the most is a question that I think that we have answered as an institution. And that is, how does the vertical integration of technology improve the human condition? I really believe we've answered parts of that question, but as the world continues to evolve and we continue to evolve and the needs and skills continue to be necessitated for hiring, that the answers will continue to shift as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And what advice would you have for folks who are in situations or in institutions? I love the moving at the speed of Motlow. I think there's a nugget, there's a gem of advice in there in terms of like understanding the pace of industry, understanding your capabilities and moving within that, right? Because you want things to work and not to, you know, break anything too fast. We're okay, you know, with, you know, having a mistake welcome culture sometimes, but you don't want things to be broken to extent to where they can't be put back together. But folks who are endeavoring to enhance capabilities of learners, or even viewing it as that of people in general, whether it be workforce, which is, you know, just covers a wide span from, you know, K through 12 to actual, you know, folks in industry, or if it's just looking at, you know, traditional college age students, or what would you say to folks who want to move in the way in which you're describing and kind of create their own niche for, as I would say, just creating a future where we can work to enhance capabilities of the learners that are coming to us, depending on us for that.
Well, I don't know that this answer is going to assist, but I'll categorize these. So I would say in positions of leadership, and I'll clarify that everyone at an institution and organization is a leader. They're just leading from where they are. So the idea of, are you willing to be vulnerable enough and transparent enough to develop trust from others, not trust of yourself? Of course you trust yourself, you know, you're sitting in the seat or you're sitting in the role, but are you willing to be vulnerable enough and transparent enough to develop trust? And that trust has to be organizational, because there are opportunities to move, quote unquote, the string or push the string. And by and large, we get it so far and then it stops. So it's like playing that game where you whisper in one person's ear and you got 25 people and everybody whispers the same thing. But by the time it gets back to you, it's a different message. And so working towards making sure that your communication is very, very adroit and moves across the organization. Initially, when I would share things at the executive level, I just had this expectation that it would go throughout the entire college as necessary, and for those that it was going to impact, and for those who were going to impact others, that it would move through the college. But that's not always the way the information gets moved around an institution or a community. Yes, so when we look at ourselves as not just an organization, but as a community, the recognition that it is my responsibility, as much as it's anyone's responsibility, to share the information that is going to impact how we do what we do every day. And it's varied because everybody is moving at different beats, but that makes sense. Like, we know exactly why we all have our paddles in the water. But there may be times where the left side of the boat is steering while the right side is paddling. And it's because we need to turn. And the right side of the boat doesn't see what the left side of the boat does. So those observations are really important. And being as present as you possibly can be, and not just in your C-suite, but across the organization. And I don't mean just inauthentically or unauthentically having conversations with people. If possible, develop the skill, because that's a skill, to have really meaningful conversations with people whenever you get a chance to have a conversation with people, because time is limited and the expectations of all of us are shrunk because of what we have to get accomplished to meet the needs of the people we serve. So I hope that can, that those phrasings, there's something that can be taken out of them. I don't think it's my complete answer, but
definitely.
That's where we start.
And what's beautiful about what you shared, and this being, one of the final episodes in this series, is that there's this human part that is really, big as it relates to, and it should start there and it should end there, right? In terms of some of the work that I'm doing, which I'm referring to as humanized leadership, which you just described, is so beautiful in terms of, and there's some nuggets to take away in terms of what would actually help a person work with other humans. We're working with humans. The reason why I use that term is because it really just reminds us right away, right? We can use all these other, ways of refer to what we're doing, but if we're not reviewing ourselves as a human and others, then we aren't able to do what you're saying. And I really do appreciate that, because to enhance the capabilities of, society through whether it be workforce or, whatever form of education, it starts with us, the culture, the people. So I really appreciate that, because I think it will mean a lot to folks coming from you to know that, let me actually take my time. Go right ahead, Dr. Torrance, if you have something else to share with that.
No, I was just thinking that, the identity of public service is really about sacrifice, selflessness, and that has to come from an authentic space. Like, there are several times throughout the year where things are more busy than others, and it's a marathon. It definitely is not a sprint in terms of making certain that you take care of those who take care of you. We all have a role to play, to march in a rhythm to march to, and in this space where we're doing the best we can every chance we get a chance to do the best we can to support other folks and develop them into what society needs. Because I often say that when we have these conversations with young people who change their majors multiple times and they're trying to figure it out, we have tools in place that can give them a better idea of what they actually have the acumen for, so they don't have to fish and search for what will best suit their personality, their wants, their needs, and helping people come to grips with understanding that it is okay to be whatever it is you want to be. And more importantly, it is okay to be. And when I say be, I really mean it is okay to just be. And
just to be.
Yeah, and I know that's probably something for another time, or and for another time to have a conversation about that, this concept of being, as you operationalize and occupy spaces. But it's okay to just be. And, you know, the outside influences and stimuli, whether it be from social media or the ways in which we garner information now, that shouldn't frame or define human existence. Humans should define and frame human existence. All of these other things are just simply fodder to help us further explain and rationalize what we're here to do. You know, we're still figuring it out.
Well, no, that's beautiful. Just to be, I mean, as a, you know, sometimes when doing these, you get those, there are a lot of nuggets and quotes, but we need permission just to be, the opportunity just to be in systems. All of what kind of the thread through is this, that's another theme or thread that really is promoting that people can be in their excellence or in wherever they are at that moment. And that we have, you know, it's great to have leaders like yourself and that are building systems and working within systems to actually help carve more space for folks to be. That's beautiful. And as a worker, as a person who works in any, you know, place, I think that I don't know if anyone who would not benefit from having that type of a leadership lens and type of approach. And as we look at accessing ability, you know, this is all about folks being able to be in their fullest potential and removing the different, whether it's a paradigm barrier, very first and foremost, from those individuals and then others who serve them. So this has been excellent. You know, that being that you reminded me of something, Dr. Torrence, when you had mentioned the being and we move so fast. And there's this, I was wondering for a while, I'm like, is society like moving faster, or like is time speeding up, like literally metaphysically or what have you? But we do know that the surface level conversations, there's, I think it's called like the acceleration principle, the surface level conversations and all of that moving is heightened because of the fast food kind of like very quick space that we're in. So hearing you say that really does help with, you know, helping folks realize like, okay, you know, you're moving fast, especially in this digital world, but we talk about AI and technology and we can move really super fast, but we can just be as well. So I wanted to really underscore how how important that is for us. And then reflect it back to you to see if there's any, you know, closing thoughts. Cause as we close this series, you know, out on accessing ability, accessing one's potential, I was really conscious about making sure to bring you on as a guest to be able to really help pull all this together. And you've done that in just an amazing way. And I didn't know if there's anything else that you wanted to share about the harnessing the potential of the context of education in the future, human capability, or any things that you would say came up for you during the conversation that you weren't able to share. And then I'll have the official closeout, but I want you to get those final words in or thoughts, because I know you have so much to share and I wish I had more time, but what else do you say, sir?
I'm sure that we'll do this again, and who knows what it'll turn into, but I'm very conscious of the non-linear nature of career arcs, opportunities, and just the investiture of the human being as a participant in a modeled world that can be framed and reframed based on the way in which you perceive it. And, you know, to deconstruct that, I would say that if we were thinking of what we wanted to be as an 8-year-old and then 10 years later, as an 18-year-old, where most people graduate between 17 and 18 or 19, depending on the birthday falling and if parents decided to hold them back because they wanted them to be better at sports or something like that, or if they needed more time to mature so that they could be successful academically. This idea or concept, not idea, but a concept of what does it mean to be participatory in the communities in which we live, love, laugh, and learn within. And today, we are seeing, as you've mentioned, the acceleration of that. And when a person has an opportunity to maneuver, not just move, but maneuver through the various opportunities, they have to choose. And sometimes when you push the button, you find out that the drink that you decided you wanted to sip on, it doesn't taste very good. So you have to make an alternative assessment. And oftentimes we are doing some of these things, even though we can see, they're blind pushes because we are not necessarily making determinations or decisions based off of data or information that we have as a human being, but it's through someone else's inputs that they're giving us this information. They're saying that we're good for this and we're great at that, and we could be good at this in some other space. But I think it's really, really, really important for people to recognize that there really is no way other than through it. I mean, you have to participate in the expectations that you have for the outcome of self, and then understanding that it begins and ends with you, the impacts and the way the world around you is an interaction point. So for whatever that is worth, as we close this out, and I tie and affix all those things to just simply live. It's not just education or workforce or people who are trying to find themselves in alternative mindsets or travel to distant moons and planets, all things that are real. But the preparation of our generation and the generations before us and after us continue to be affixed on one of the most exciting times, in my opinion, to be alive. It is comparable to the industrial age. It is comparable to the agrarian age. It's comparable to when we first started to see transportation, because you went from carrying things on backs to using a wheel. The use of and the digital transformation within all of our paradigms, we don't know what's next, I don't think, but we're trying to parse and frame what's going to best suit where we are as a society, where we are as communities, to best serve people who are coming through our thresholds and doors and organizations. It's an exciting time to be alive, and I'm happy to be a hub. I'm happy to be a ball bearing within a hub that is hopefully helping it spin.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, yes, and yes, and I'm very thankful for being able to have you on the show, but then also have you as a friend and colleague, mentor, because this future forward looking perspective is what we need. We need more solutions, growth narratives, and I think you have it, and I really appreciate you for joining me on this journey, and all the listeners, for you all joining us on this journey, this Accessing Ability series, where we know the future of us and our capabilities are intertwined, and they feed each other, and we've learned tons today from Dr. Torrin. So thank you, good sir. I really appreciate having you on the show. And I look forward to many more conversations in the future. You've all been tuned into the Universal Love Movement podcast series on this special one on Accessing Ability. Peace and love to everyone.